anti-combatant on body talk. Off you go.
Okay, I suppose everybody can hear me, Corey. So, thank you all for coming. And, well, as you can see, the title is nothing like the one that you have in your programs, but don't feel worried you haven't been deceived or anything. It's just that I'm sort of shifted my focus in the research, but the contents will be still more or less the same, so worry not. So this study is a part of my doctoral dissertation, which will be about embodied practices in interactional multitasking, and the project is financed by the Academy of Finland. So what I'm going to do in this presentation, I'll first remind you of some previous research that I'm going to base this study on, as well as define some other concepts and terminology referred to in this presentation. And then I'll present some preliminary findings that I made so far, and then showcase them through three quite different examples, and hope that everything will match. So if you wish to take pictures of the slides, that's completely fine, but because none of the video clips or images haven't been anonymized, so try not to take pictures when there's anybody's face showing in the screen. Okay, so first of all, body talk. So as defined by Shekloff in 1998, body talk means the divergent orientations of the body sectors above and below the neck and waist, respectively. So, but body talk is basically an embodied feature of interaction that has the capacity to display engagement with multiple causes of action and interaction involvements. So that's naturally a pretty fruitful environment for me to look into different sorts of phenomena. Body talk also does these hierarchizing activities in the sense that the lower body functions as the anchor that points towards the primary orientation, and then you can gradually shift it to first the mid and then finally the head parts. Previously, body talk has been studied or has been part of the analysis in context of very specific settings and activities, including but not entirely the doctor-patient interaction, student-teacher tutoring, playing video games, and also negotiating participation between multiple conversations at a house party. But since Shekloff's 1998 paper, at least to my knowledge, there has been no systematic sequential study focusing merely on body talk itself. If you know better, please let me know at some point after the presentation. But still, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to look into body talks in various different contexts and in connection with manual activity, which is also something that was heavily hinted, the relevance of manual activity and body talk, in both the introduction and conclusion sections of Shekloff's paper, but not in the between. So I'm interested to see what comes out of it. So then the data I'm using. As I said, I have quite various contexts and settings represented. So first of all, I got some workplace data, and that's supposed to be a video, but okay. But I got two different laboratories happening in Finland. Then got some office interactions, two different types of offices where people work together and interact. Then I have some domestic data with people who work in kitchens. I've got student apartments and also family homes. And then finally, also some other institutional settings such as university practicals and one university seminar. So through this very various set of data, I hope at least that if I can pinpoint some phenomena from all of those sets, I can say with like fair certainty that they're generalizable, that they exist in different sorts of settings. So in this presentation, and then the paper to follow whenever that comes out, I'll also be referring to the temporal orders of multi-activity as they were defined by Lorenza Mondara in her book chapter in the 2014 multi-activity book. So in the parallel order, two or more causes of action are simultaneously achieved without any hitches. Then in the embedded orders, both causes of action are organized together, occasioning some mutual adjustments like suspensions and resumptions, and also slowing down or accelerating the pace for one or the other course of the action. And then in the exclusive order, one or more course of action is abandoned in favor of another one. And I personally treat those as like at least temporary shifts away from multi-activity and into mono-activity. But we'll see there's some more evidence for that later on. But yeah, so in this case, my primary focus will be on then the embedded orders where the suspension and resumption can mostly take place. So the study then itself, as I said, is a systematic sequential study on body talk in the context of multi-activity, and especially in situations where one or more of the participants in a conversation is also involved in some clearly visible manual activity. And so I focus on the interactual aspects of suspensions and resumptions of manual activity during body talks, and then what the participants' suspension of their manual activity tell us about the shifts in their orientation between the activity and the interaction. So I've gone through altogether about 90 individual body talks from different data sets, and in those I saw that the manual activity is often temporarily suspended or halted in moments of increased relevance for recipient response. So for example, Cyrus and Rosano have written about pursuing response with a combination of like interrogative grammar and gaze. Of course, gaze plays a big role in body talk, as in body talk is an enabler of mutual gaze, and other sorts of displays of acknowledgement. And these moments then included repair and information seeking sequences, some humorous turns of talk where the other one is supposed to laugh or expected to laugh, or in introductions of central characters or concepts in stories where some sort of a go-ahead or like a token of understanding is to be given for the story to move on. But yeah, so in this case I'm mostly focusing on the other initiated repair and information seeking sequences, as those are the ones mostly where there's some sort of interactual problem that the participants are solving together, and also because those two together consist more than half of all the cases. So it was so to say, an easy way to narrow it down. Okay, so some initial observations then. Whereas body talk alone marks a talk as a temporary secondary activity, if you compare it to the primary activity in the manual one, then the suspensions of the manual activity, they display a shift in the orientation away from the primary activity and more towards that of the interaction and the talk. So when the manual activity is done in parallel with body talks, the talks appear to be organized to last only for the time only for duration of time when eye gaze is not required for continuing the activity. For example, if you're reading something or if you're chopping something that you don't want to get rid of in your fingers, you might occasionally glance back at the activity and then you can look back at the other participant. So those were the in context of parallel. And these are usually done in very quick manner so as to display that, okay, this is a temporary shift and I'll now be back to you. But also activities that can be managed in parallel temporal order are also quite often suspended for interactual reasons. But what I mean by that there's like no witnessable reason why that could not be also continued in parallel. It doesn't come out of any practical necessity per se. And also then that the practice of suspension and talk, it takes somewhat different functions for instigators and respondents, as I call them. So I'm always happy to learn about some better terminology, but for the time being I'm calling them that. So a bit more about that next. So if you look at the practice that's done by the instigator, so those who are producing the sequentially initial turn there, that's supposed to be responded in some way. Their onset of body talk often takes place at transitions between sub-activities or during activities that can be continued in parallel. So in short, instigators have freedom to coordinate their talk and their embodied activity as they wish, because they're the ones who will choose basically that when it is that they will initiate the talk. When they release the talk, it's either once the respondent has provided a relevant response, for example, to a question, or once it has been made clear that respondent at least knows what he or she is supposed to be responding to. And this comes to play, for example, repair. So if the response is, and it's repeated, the question is repeated, and then when the respondent is placed, okay, now I get it, so at that point, the other one can turn back. And what the instigator's talks and activity suspensions do is they both seem to be pursuing and evaluating responses. So pursuing comes from the Cyrus and Rosano paper again, so eye gaze an interrogative question, but the evaluation comes from the notion that the talks are held and the manual activities are held suspended until relevant or preferred answer is received. And through that resumption of the activity or release of the talk, it can be communicated, okay, I'm happy with your answer now. Well, respondents then, overwhelmingly, the respondents suspend their manual activity and do the body talk already at the point when the instigator's turn is still underway. So this is in a very hasty manner. And this displays an orientation towards the interaction over the manual activity, no matter what it is. And compared to the instigator, respondents generally cannot choose the moment when an embodied response is relevant, and thus they more often, at least initially, suspend their manual activity rather than continue it. And respondents usually release their talk after they receive some sort of a receipt or token from the instigator, okay, you've done a good job, or once the instigator has released their own talk first. There are some cases that work go against this, but they're very rare. And basically what's being done in this primarily is just to display availability, that okay, I'm doing this thing, but as you ask me a question, I'm now available to answer it and to continue the interaction as long as is required. And then as some examples show, after the initial talk and suspension, if there are any follow-up questions, so that they can be also conducted in parallel by the respondent. Okay. Let's move to the examples then. So the first one. So the first one takes place in a laboratory. We've got Diana, who can be seen there back in the white lab coat. She's a friend's postdoc researcher. And then we've got Santeri in the middle, the guy with the gray hair and glasses, who's one of the PIs of the project that they're all working in, and he's Finnish. And then there's Arttu here in the foreground, who doesn't really take part in the interaction here. So what's happening is that Santeri and Arttu are pipetting some liquid into micro test tubes, and Diana is washing some bottles. So what we'll see first is that Santeri asks Diana a question while continuing to work on this pipetting thing, and Diana then looks a bit over her shoulder and answers. And then later on, Diana approaches Santeri with a question, to which he will be then the respondent. And let's hope this will play. So the initial exchange in the clip, as you could see, that was managed completely in parallel temporal order. So it's clear that Santeri does not have any trouble with pipetting and talking at the same time, even when he's not looking at his hands, except for when it's really required to hand-eye coordination there. But yeah, so line 12. After the pause, Diana approaches Santeri with an empty bottle in her hand and asks him a question about buying some more of it. So possibly anticipating trouble here, Santeri then begins to turn towards Diana about halfway through the utterance and displays he's available for talk. He's still continuing the manual activity at this point and initiates repair in line 13, and possibly because there is this constant hum going on and there might be some troubles in hearing. And also it's not certain at this point yet if Santeri knows which one is being addressed, him or Arttu, because he wasn't looking. So then in line 14, Diana repeats her question and Santeri turns his upper body slightly towards Diana. And in line 15 answers the question she asked in terminal overlap. So when Diana then continues to give an account for the questions in line 16, Santeri suspends his manual activity, leans in a bit to glance at the bottle, and then he starts to turn his upper body back toward the work counter. While he's still facing Diana, he places his hands on the countertop, displaying availability and marking that what Diana says is important, which is actually verbalized later on in the clip. So, in line 17, then Santeri takes a new turn by stating the test tube cradle on the counter isn't in the best shape either. He turns to face the counter and reaches to point towards the cradle he's referring to. And then after this one, the pipetting is resumed in parallel order once again until the end of the excerpt. So just to sum up, the conversation manages in parallel order with the manual activity at the first. Instigator's question followed by an abrupt head turn and open class repair initiator, ha. And then there's a slight turn of the upper body and a reply during the repetition of the question. Manual activity was suspended during the instigator's turn once it became clear that she was not yet finished and an account was to follow. And then the manual activity was resumed at a temperance and relevance place once the talk had been released. So the second example takes place in a family home. So there's a mom in the left watching over Tanya, the daughter, who's making some dough, and then father is washing dishes there. There's some exchange at first about going to practice or rehearsals, and then there's some problems with dad's hearing what Tanya says, and then he turns and initiates repair. So yeah, as we can see, there's something problematic for dad in Tanya's turn in line 19. So there's a 3.1 second pause between the trouble source and the repair initiation, and during which dad reaches a transition point between two sub-activities, which were like rinsing a spatula and putting it down again. So he just freezes his hand mid those activities. And so he turns to gaze at Tanya at that point. So as his gaze reaches Tanya, he also at the same moment produces the repair initiation. And in line 21, when he's already in body talk facing Tanya. Half a second later, then it's Tanya also begins to turn toward dad and repeats and reformulates the trouble source turn in line 23. What she does is that she also suspends her manual activity for a short period of time for the duration of which there's mutual gaze between them two, and then continues it when she has turned back to her activity. And then dad begins to release his talk and turn back to the sink at this point as well, and continues the washing, and only at this point produces the news receipt O, once a talk has been already released. There. Okay, so just to keep up, I'm not going to repeat everything I just said, but we just jump next to the third example. So this takes place in a student apartment, once again in a kitchen. There's Lloyd on the left who's washing dishes, and then Shayna who's preparing a salad. And then at some point, Shayna asks Lloyd a question about when he'll be finishing his PhD. Okay, so that was a short one. So basically, what we just saw is that during Shayna's question, Lloyd, in quite quick succession, closes a tap, twists his body, and gazes at Shayna, and also suspends his washing. Shayna only starts to turn at this point before the tap question, aren't you? And she continues her manual activity, chopping throughout, which I find remarkable. So once Shayna's question has reached a potential point of completion, Lloyd resumes his manual activity by pouring out the water from the tray, but he still remains in body talk throughout while producing his answer. So here then, for the respondent, the question being asked is prioritized higher in relation to the washing compared to his own reply, which can then be produced in a parallel temporal order. So Shayna begins to release her talk in line 3. And once Lloyd's answer is coming to a projectable completion, and then he acknowledges his answer and kind of assesses it as a joke by laughing a bit. And immediately after this, Lloyd also starts to turn back to the sink and continues washing. And I'll also show you really quickly what happens right after this exchange here, because as hinted by the Shayna slightly rising okay, she wasn't quite happy with the answer. That was decidedly vague. So just really quickly what happens next. So here again, there were two follow-up questions on that. But what I find interesting is that at this point, Lloyd doesn't turn again. He just like continues washing and is facing the sink, whereas it's Shayna who, after each of the questions, turns to quickly to glance at Lloyd. But still, this goes to play on the point that after the initial turn and talk, it's okay also for the respondent then to continue in parallel. Okay, so just to wrap up then. So all the examples show included multi-activity in both parallel and embedded temporal order. So the fact that in examples 1 and 3 the manual activities were suspended in connection with being asked a question and turning to gaze at the instigator, whereas in example 2 the talk and suspension were part of displaying trouble in hearing, understanding, and also initiating repair. So due to response relevance of the sequentially initial turns, instigators and respondents have different rights and obligations, so to say, and consequently also different temporal resources concerning managing their other simultaneous activities. So respondents, they usually have to react quickly and suspend their manual activity and turn already during the instigator's turn, and always either before or simultaneously with the onset of their responsive turn and the talk. Whereas when instigators, then they appear to organize the timing of their talk and embodied conduct more freely. So turning away from and suspending a manual activity take different functions with instigators and respondents, but in all cases they are parts of sustaining interaction by displaying mutual involvement in a conversation and or reinforcing it by solving some sort of interactional problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Some time for questions, thoughts, comments, observations. Yes, go ahead, Barbara.
Well, I don't know how you could try to standardize it, but you pointed out yourself that there seems to be a factor of how usual is the activity that's going on for the person who does the talk, like the lab researcher.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
When it keeps on doing, I think we probably would think we have to focus on this, and same as with cutting up the vegetables or whatever,
mm-hmm.
It would be a very personal matter, I think, whether you consider this to be combinable with the body talking or not. But I don't really know, I mean, I think it's interesting and you put it out, but I don't really know how you could have sufficient information about, I mean, in the case of the lab, you can say, okay, it's a proficient researcher, in the case of cutting vegetables, that's a very personal matter, so I don't really know how you could try to gather ground for this, but it does seem to play a role in your data.
Yeah, well, I mean, I work it on a case-by-case basis. So
yeah.
Basically, in these, I use only say this about examples where it's explicitly shown already within the same clip that this person is able to do this.
Yeah.
And then if there are those cases when he or she has first done something in parallel without like keeping an eye gaze to what he or she is doing,
yeah.
And if that is then suspended,
yeah.
It's not out of a practical necessity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Kevin. So you look at two sequence types, right, or primarily, so other initiations of repair and
mm-hmm.
information-seeking questions.
Mm.
I'm wondering, does this generalize to adjacency pairs? And if it does, might that not be a way to frame it, or so the sort of body torque in the context of adjacency pairs?
I tried that at first. So first, when I initially started to like do those like small sub-collections of these and see how they like coexist with, for example, first pair parts and second pair parts, it came awfully messy because, for example, as you could see in these cases, some of the sequence initial like first pair parts, they were followed by another first pair part that was in the second position. So that made, for example, a repair initiator. So that made it a bit difficult for me to try to keep a track. So is this a first pair part, is it a second pair part, or is it a bit of both, or should I have like different categories also for first pair parts in first position, first pair part in second position, and so on and so forth. So I just took the like lazy man's way out and called them instigator and respondent. But I see your point there though, and that's what I initially tried to do and would like to do, but that might require a bit more going through the data as well and trying to come up with some like feasible enough common nominators and categories that hold up.
Well, what you just described in Shedrock's book is all about that, in the sequence expansion.
Then I need to
read a set of term insert sequences of what you described.
Then I definitely need to revisit that.
There is a sort of set of terms out there that is get us pretty far.
That would be probably a better way to go.
And on that basis, rather than go down that road, might you not reasonably say that the body talk is part of the first pair part or the second pair part, rather than give it its own position and sequence, then see it as complementary to and part of some bit of business which is being done by the body. So you don't have then to worry about sticking it on somewhere or sticking it in somewhere. It's actually part of what you're doing when you're talking, either as a preface to it but still part of it, or a postscript to it but still part of it. That gets you out of that problem of having to find its own place. Another question. Right, one more before Elizabeth comes up. Do you want to come up anyway and do some hand over? Good. In which case, thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.